point is, you're welcome,
for
I
what?
Guess. Because I'm your nuclear deterrent. It's working. We're safe. America is secure. You want my property? You can't have it. But I did you a big favor. I've successfully privatized world peace. What more do you want? For now. I tried to play ball with these ass clowns.
Fuck you, Mr. Star. Fuck you, buddy. You're a jerk. You're a jerk. You've been lying.
Got it. We shouldn't experience another hiccup again.
No.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you on the behalf of one of our fans, one of our many fans, where you got your Philly cheesesteak when you drove all the way to Philadelphia just for the sandwich.
Oh, yeah. So we went to, me and a buddy of mine, we went to Max's Cheesesteaks is what it was called. I was told you can't go to the touristy spots because that's like not the real cheesesteak. That's not like the proper one. So we went to Max's and I have what was called a hole. And it's like an 18 or like 20 inch cheesesteak. And they put like 2 pounds of meat on it from,
Jesus,
I think, what
Christ.
I got. Yeah. Whole bunch of cheese, and I got like fried onions and a couple other things, and the whole business like takes cash only. They didn't even take a card.
So real old school.
Oh yeah. So, and everybody is just in this line with their money ready.
Oh, and the soup Nazi. Got it.
Yep, exactly. And so I get my cheesesteak done, $18. Hand my $18. I get my big giant cheesesteak, and then there's like this bar that's to the left of it, and you just sit at this bar that is part of like the restaurant but seems completely different from the restaurant.
Right.
And yeah, sat down and ate my cheesesteak in like maybe 20-30 minutes because I didn't eat all day to
that
prepare for it.
Oh, see, that sounds long to me. I have watched you eat before, not in like a weird, creepy way, but I, you know, I've been by you when you've been consuming food products, and that seems slow, like you took your time and enjoyed it. And hopefully, I don't know if this is going to be a theme moving forward where you describe in detail a very seductive and sultry way foods that you eat from around the East Coast. But, I mean, if we want to explore that, we can.
Oh, good. Yeah, depending on the popularity. Anybody wants to hear my play-by-plays of new foods that I've tried.
I think it's going to kick it up a notch. But I would like to continue with the theme of our countdown to Endgame. Today we are talking about Iron Man 2, the first sequel in the MCU. We're going to come to find out it's the first sequel also for director and actor Jon Favreau playing Happy Hogan as he returns for this. We also see the return of Tony Stark, Pepper Potts. We see Rhodey Rhodes being played by Don Cheadle for the first time as he took over Terrence Howard's spot. We talked about that in the last episode. And we also get introduced to Black Widow. We've seen Nick Fury before, but Natasha Stroganoff.
Romanoff.
Stroganoff. Yeah. Again, that's the other podcast talking about food consumption. Mm-hmm. But we get introduced to a lot of people in this. And we kind of watch Tony Stark, this eccentric, brilliant billionaire. You know, he admits in the last one that he is Iron Man after kind of going through how the destruction of his products brought, you know, a lot of wealth to him. And, you know, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to save lives because his life was saved. And in this one, you see him battling almost like with himself in a way of, you know, that it opens up. And, I, you know, hopefully... I'd love to play this audio, but the him in the courtroom fighting against the Senate, and they want his weapons, and he's just, you know, he's becoming completely arrogant and almost like off the hinges. So it's this movie. I kind of see it as like him fighting against himself. What do you think?
Yeah, the villain that they had, like Whiplash, who ends up actually coming in as like his main antagonist. Yeah, I didn't see him as even much of a threat at all. It was, yeah, his own arrogance or his own, I wouldn't say stupidity, but just his overconfidence was the big one. And him not telling anybody about his palladium core that he was using to power his arc reactor was killing him. And right. so he's making all these stupid decisions that people think are stupid, but he's actually pretty calculated in those moves because he's trying to set someone else up, you know, Pepper. Right? Oh, hey, I don't want to tell you that I'm dying, but I'm making all these moves so that when I do die, you're not just blindsided.
Yeah, you're set up. Mm-hmm. And the movie begins by setting up Whiplash and by setting up this huge, this revenge plot that he has. And we see all these newspaper clippings and these articles about how his father worked with Howard Stark and how, you know, he screwed him over and now he wants to get revenge on Tony Stark. And I think that there's a lot playing into the Russian versus Americans in that as well. But that was one thing I was thinking about earlier, too, is the Iron Man trilogy. And correct me if I'm wrong. I kind of see more so in this one that each one kind of stands on their own. The first one sets up the MCU for sure. And each one after that sets up the next movie on the end credit scene. But the movie alone really doesn't set up Infinity War. It doesn't it doesn't go where maybe there's some elements in it. Like there's Agent Coulson and we talked about Romanoff and Nick Fury being a big part of this one. But it doesn't really they didn't need to be done to tell us a story. Like if you look at Guardians 1, 2, and then you look at Thor, like all of those have different elements. Like the second Thor has one of the stones in it. Yep. And
The ether. Yeah, they call it in that one.
Right, and the third Thor leads into Infinity War, so that's a direct tie-in. Captain America, each and every one of those has everything to do with the end, right? Like the end game that we're trying to get to. So I found that interesting as I was thinking about it, is the first Iron Man really sets it up. The second one is kind of like, you know who he is. We found success in this, and it's just a big budget action thriller with this villain. And we talked about it with Ironmonger, where you have a villain that's just going to – he's going to be there. He's going to be prominent. There's going to be a storyline, and then he's going to get killed, and we're going to move on.
Yep. Well, and I thought this movie was different in terms that it showed a hell of a lot more Tony Stark than it did Iron Man, comparatively, because you see essentially it's more of a Tony Stark story than it is an Iron Man movie. From what I've got, because you get, maybe 2-3 action scenes and that's it in the entire film.
And pretty major ones, too, but you're right. Yeah,
because it's not a film where there's constant, Iron Man on screen. It's Tony Stark trying to come to terms with, his impending death and what decisions he's making. And then all of a sudden, Whiplash comes, he beats him in 5 seconds. You know, once he gets his Iron Man suit on in that one. And then it's Hammer, recruiting Ivan to then build these things. And then you get this action scene right at the end. There wasn't these Iron Man globetrotting, right, saving the world, or him, using the suit for some greater purpose. It was just, I'm just being Tony Stark. But I found that after watching the movie again, I liked it more, because after these type of movies, the superhero movie kind of starts, in a sense, because Marvel knows that they have gold with everything that they make, so they almost become formulaic after this, where you know exactly what's about to happen. But to me, even this movie, because a lot of people just want to see Tony Stark being Tony Stark and just being a dick to everybody, and you don't see that in almost any other movie anymore after this, where this movie almost solely focuses on Tony being a dick to everyone.
No, and you mentioned something. Tony Stark he's more prominent as the movies move forward. Civil War, Iron Man 3, all the movies where, we've seen him on this story arc of dealing with how he is going to own up to all the things that he's done, and if he truly wants to continue fighting as Iron Man, and that's that duality that he's constantly facing. Mm-hmm. And in the comic, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, in the comic, it dealt with Tony Stark facing alcoholism. And there's even a comic book cover I was looking at where he, it's Tony Stark, like, in the mirror, like, just completely hammered. And he's, it's, again, that duality of understanding that he has the responsibility now to do, you know, to fight these wars and these things that he may have started. And he, and this is an age old tale of a superhero creating supervillains. So he's dealing with all this stuff. So it's, you, that's what you see. You see him, you know, partnering up with William Hurt, who plays the general who's, you know, he signs the treaty in Civil War, and I won't go too much further into the other movies, but he makes a choice after a while, and the theme continues of being more so Tony Stark.
Yep. And at this, it's not until he discovers that element in the movie after his father, like, shows him that video, hey, I'm leaving this all to you, like, we don't have the technology yet, but you will. And he has that epiphany moment where he's like, oh, hey, I'm going to finally have this new element to save my life. But then he starts thinking about how he can use it to better himself and better Iron Man. The previous Tony Stark wasn't like that. To me, like this movie has that change right at the end.
Well, and he, maybe it's... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like he makes that choice. Instead of being this billionaire playboy that only cares about either himself and, like, Pepper, you know, and world be damned, is when he starts thinking about the world at large. Because you see that with him talking to Nick Fury about, like, joining the Avengers program at the end and things. And he was, like, not even open to that kind of team-up or anything before. Say, in the first movie, he was out for himself. But now that he's discovered that there's a lot more people out there, it was, like, to be, yeah, this was, like, the turning point when Marvel started making the Marvel movies.
And maybe it's because, like, RDJ is, like, the main, you know, he's, like, the backbone of all of these movies. Maybe it's because of that, that they continually focus on his backstory. And, like, there's backstory with Bucky and Captain America where they're always dealing with these demons, for sure. But you just pointed out something. They're constantly going back and pointing out different things in Tony's past that either changes the path that he takes or reaffirms the thought that he had. And like, he's constantly getting jabbed with it, whether it's, you know, through Pepper or through his dad or, like, you know, just history in general. That's interesting. And it could just be, again, that he's, like, the major focal point of all of these movies. You touched on a character that I really liked in the movie, Justin Hammer, who plays kind of his, who is, like, I mean, not, I guess, is like, I guess, an enemy as far as technology goes, or he's a competitor.
The doofus, dude, he's of all time.
This is one of those things where you can't see anybody else cast as it. Like, Sam Rockwell for me was so amazing in this role, and when he like danced on stage, like when he'd come out to the Stark Expo, everything about him, how he talked to Tony, the fact that he was dating he was trying to date the reporter that Tony initially slept with in the first one, who in real life, Sam Rockwell actually dated for a long time.
There we go. You know, look at that.
So a lot of good chemistry there, but, I loved him. And, you know, I guess every character in this, I mean, everybody was perfectly cast, and everybody that did move forward, continue moving forward, like Don Cheadle. But, like, I don't know how I feel about Mickey Rourke. I don't feel much, but...
No, I think he had the worst fake Russian accent I had ever heard.
Yeah.
He did a lot
of method acting. Like, he got in character and bought the gold teeth and bought the bird and stuff. But you're right. That stuff was a little, I'd say, too much, but not enough.
Well, and he was also a character who was created for the film. Like, Ivan, like, Vanko was never in any sort of comic ever. It was Anton, who is his father. Anton was Whiplash in the comics. And so this is a character that was created entirely for the film adaptation. And so, one, he didn't have a lot to go on then from the comics, because he couldn't, like, immerse himself into a character that had already been created. He almost had to make something entirely his own. So I can see where he could fall on that. Say, like, Robert Downey Jr. had an entire persona that he could copy. He just happened to be really good at that persona. But Ivan Vanko has never existed outside the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was entirely created for Iron Man 2.
Well, this is another scenario, too, where Jon Favreau, and I don't know if this had to do with influence from Feige and or other people at Marvel in continuing with the contract, but the Mandarin was also supposed to show up in this one, as he was in the first one as well. So they still didn't have, as you mentioned earlier, they didn't have the formula yet, and they kept trying to inject all these things.
What I did like about Hammer was how different they made him as well from the comics, because Hammer is a much older person in the comic books. He's this very, very rich businessman, like Tony Stark is, but throughout the comics, he tries to almost kill Tony in every conceivable way. He creates entire, like, supervillain clubs. In a sense, he's paying most of the villains. Like, he's the one who's footing the bill for these villains to go after Iron Man and try to take him out. And if you see this version of Hammer, you know this movie version of Hammer is nowhere near smart or cunning enough to ever do anything like that.
Well, he just wants to have the notoriety of creating these robots, like, to compete with Stark. It's not to, like kill him.
Right, yeah. He wants Tony's acceptance more than anything, is what it seems, because he keeps telling people, yeah, we're friends, like, we hang out all the time. Like, he almost just seems like a businessman who wants to be like Tony, but he's not the man who's, like, willing to do it by any means necessary. He's, like, too nice, almost, you know? And his tech isn't very good, as we saw from the ex-wife demonstration.
Yeah. Oh, the one that turns the guy's back around. He survived, by the way.
Yeah. Oh no. It was the thing that War Machine fires out at Whiplash right at the end, where he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna hit him with the ex-wife," and it just goes tink, and then Tony goes, "Oh, hey, was that Hammer Tech? Yeah. Seems about right."
See, but the best part about that, and I will put that in. Actually, let's listen to that right now.
Oh yes. Oh yes. 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 Is it my birthday? You got it. What did you do? What did you do? Oh. Is this what I think it is?
Yes, it is. Hammer, I want to know what you're going to do for us.
What am I going to do for you? The first thing I'm going to do for you is I'm going to upgrade your software. And then the second thing, I think I should slap Hammer.
I'm talking about firepower.
Were you talking to the right guy?
Claridge high-tech semi-automatic 9mm pistol. Two downtown?
I agree.
M24 shotgun, pump action, 5-round magazine. You know what? You're not a hunter. What am I talking about? I'm getting rid of it. This is the FN2000 from Belgium. It's what makes something better than waffles. It's beautiful, but I can tell this isn't disco enough for you, so I'm going to put it right here. We're looking at a Milcor 40mm grenade launcher. Tear gas, smoke. Hippie control. You're tough. Let me tell you something. Size does matter. Don't let anyone tell you different. This is an M134 762 minigun, 6 individual barrels, the torso taker, powder maker. A boy's in uniform call it Uncle Gazpacho or Puff the Magic Dragon. Okay. These are the Cubans, baby. These are the Cohibas, the Monte Cristos. This is a kinetic kill sidewinder vehicle with a secondary cyclotrimethylene trinitramine RDX burst. It's capable of busting the bunker under the bunker you just busted. If you were any smarter, it would write a book that would make Ulysses look like it was written in crayon. And it would read it to you. This is my Eiffel Tower. This is my Rachmaninoff's Third, my Pieta. It's completely elegant. It's bafflingly beautiful. And it's capable of reducing the population of any standing structure to zero. I call it the ex-wife.
Like, it's the description and how intense he gets with, like, his tech. And you get so bought into his arrogance. And and that's what I love about, I think it's just Sam Rockwell. He made the character himself. Regardless of what the comic book portrayed, and that all of that stuff was, he's basically telling you, like, and convincing you, he's a good salesman, except his product sucks, that, you know, his tech is the best. That's what I loved about him the most.
Yeah, and it, I liked how he was put in the film, but he almost seemed to be set up to be much more of a long-term, like, adversary to Tony after the movies, but we've never seen him again after this movie, because he got arrested, you know. And
yeah, by Coulson and Pepper Potts, like, slams him.
Yeah, like, this isn't the last you've seen of me and all this. And I went, well, it's been, like, 10 years, and it is the last we've seen of you.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. If they do not include you moving forward, it's pretty much over. I mean, even some, you know, like Natalie Portman, those are just rumors of her ever coming back. But, you know, once a franchise has moved on, it's, I mean, it's not likely they're going to come back. There's a note I put in here about Justin Hammer and Stark, and I just want to read it because autocorrect gave me something lovely. Ooh. It says, I loved the competitive nature of Hammer and Stark throughout and how hiring Ivan put Hammer in the ass. So that right there is another amazing moment in autocorrect history.
Yeah, so, it basically was just what happened.
Basically. So there's a lot of fun facts and trivia about this movie that I wanted to share, but were there any, like, other things that stood out to you or things that you loved a lot about the movie? Did you like this movie in general?
To me, this is a movie that's grown on me throughout the years. Like, I hated it when I saw it when it first came out because I wanted more Iron Man. But as I've watched more of the MCU over the course of, like, this decade, most people want to see more Tony Stark, because they love the attitude, they love the persona. Like, this is a movie where if you want to see more Tony being Tony, like, this is it. Like, this is 2 hours that you get of Tony just being Tony.
Yeah, that and Iron Man 3, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and so I like the movie a lot more viewing it just this past week, because I just had, like, the bad taste in my mouth of my, you know, younger self going, like, I just want explosions and death and Iron Man blowing everything up. And now watching it, I went, you know, I actually want more Tony Stark, like, in my movie.
Yeah, and the thing we do see is the evolution of the armor. So the suitcase suit that he gets, you know, given during the, Monte Carlo? The scene where they're racing.
Yes.
Monte Carlo? I apologize for any inconsistencies in the messaging there. But the, when Whiplash is, like, ripping the car apart and it's tossed to him and then he gets, like, suited up, like, that tech, we also see it evolve into something that's nanotech that just spreads all over your body. But I think this technology is more realistic, and I liked the first one too, even though it was bulky and clunky, because that is more, I mean, a real time. I know it's all false, but it's it's more realistic to technology that we would have today as far as exosuits, and it probably, you know, we don't have suits that could make us fly. They'd be huge, but the first one was so, it showcased how it worked and all the knobs and the pulley systems and everything, the hydraulics that were involved in it. Yeah. And, but I do love how it just gets better and better and easier to put on, so he can, like, easily and efficiently just put it on and move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This movie is almost like a setup for all of his, like, Mark V, Mark VI, Mark VII armors that he ends up making because of the result of his element discovery. And you just see that over each new movie that he's in. People are like, oh, nice suit. Yeah, it's nanotech. And nobody else has this type of technology because he's the one who invented the damn element, like, in the first place. And so, to me, this movie showed so much of his just engineering prowess as a person to be able to go, yeah, there's a whole bunch of people copying me, and now nobody could ever copy me ever because they didn't invent an element. You know, and, like, without him being as secretive as he is now, he'd have probably even told people that. He'd have went, oh, yeah, everybody, I just invented this element. Like,
yeah,
have fun. But he never publicly admits anything like that in this movie, that he did create and discover this new element, because now he's much more careful after this.
Right. And speaking of the element, this is one thing that we slightly touched on, but didn't go in depth on, but it's definitely worth mentioning, is the fact that Nick Fury and Black Widow give him a shot that actually fixes that jigsaw-like infection that's running through his body. Yeah. So he's also he's not only fighting, you know, who he is and what he brings to the world and you know, the decisions that he's made, but he's also battling actually physically dying. And he's drinking the green concoction, and they finally give him a shot. You know, of course, they have access to everything, which is a conspiracy theory that the government does have the resolution and the cure for things like AIDS and cancer, which, you know, maybe the MCU is telling us a little bit more. Maybe they're being funded by Trump. You know, who knows? There's a lot of conspiracies out there that aren't real, like the ones that I'm stating. Do your own research.
Yes.
But that is a big part. So she's introduced, she becomes like his secretary, and then he finds out there's that funny scene with her and Happy Hogan, and he's been doing his Krav Maga, and he fights one guy and she knocks out eight of them.
Yeah.
But they play a huge part in saving Tony from himself, because that creation that he initially created to keep the shrapnel away from his heart when he was in the cave is now powering suits, but it's also poisoning his body. And Ivan knows it too.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Because he mentions it like in the cell about the palladium that he was using for the arc reactor. And so he's like, horrible way to die.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this is I did enjoy the movie much for the same reasons that you did, around loving Robert Downey Jr. I would have liked to see more action scenes, but you know, the relationship between him and Pepper Potts is getting stronger. We get to see more of Happy Hogan just as like a participant, and Don Cheadle again. I love even the small parts with Gary Shandling in the Senate, and how he just, like, you know, he says "fuck you, Stark" at the end, just like loses it during a Senate hearing.
Yeah,
like those moments are amazing.
And that was their one F word that they got, you know, from a PG-13 movie, and it used it brilliantly.
Yeah,
they also had a pretty meta thing at that Senate hearing, because once Don Cheadle comes in, he says, like, "I'm here, like, get over it, let's move on." And not only is he talking to Tony, but he's talking to the audience, because he's not the same actor.
Oh, I didn't even. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit of Kyle trivia.
Yeah. And so if you think about it that way, where not only is he talking to Tony, but he's also telling us, he's like, yeah, I'm Don Cheadle, I've taken over this character, get over it, like, let's move on and let's go forward.
Dude, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next time you see that scene, he's also talking to you in that.
Damn. Kyle got deep.
Super deep.
Well, Kyle, let's keep talking about the trivia and the fun facts here. So Marvel and Jon Favreau actually had a lot of disputes on set due to the need of Marvel wanting to continue to build on the MCU, you know, with the addition and storyline of S.H.I.E.L.D. and other elements that would bleed into future films. The disputes got so bad that Favreau turned down directing Iron Man 3, even though he stars in it. He just chose, because of creative differences and, you know, how they were acting on set, to just not direct it, which is, I mean, that's a big deal. That would have been his first trilogy. But due to those disputes, he just moved on. But he was still in it. So, and he still participates.
Yep. And still does.
So not bad. Mickey Rourke found that the hardest thing about his character was pretending to understand the ins and outs of technology. So typing on the keyboard on set was actually really hard for him. And it just challenged him of, like, he wanted to look like he knew what he was doing, because he was deep into technology in that character. And as I mentioned earlier, he was very method, not through learning the accent. He did go to a Russian prison to kind of get a little bit of information there and ideas of how to portray the character, but more so he, like, paid for gold teeth and that bird out of his belt, out of his pocket, so he could birth. So he, that, you know, even though he wasn't the best at it, he did okay. ScarJo was stoked to get the role. She did a bunch of training. She dyed her hair prior to auditioning for the role to, like, really convince people that she wanted to do it. I'm not really a fan of her as an actor, but I really enjoy her in these films. That's, oddly enough, I would rather she not be in other movies, but I prefer her in this one. And there was people like Emily Blunt that was signed to it. There were so many different people that had their names attached to this, and she ended up snagging it.
Yeah, and then like all that stuff just ended up kind of falling through for them, which now in hindsight, do they kick themselves, you know, for not getting the part? Say that that, you know, causes like Scarlett Johansson to be like a real household name in terms of this role. Like what else do you name her if you think of her like in movies? Most people think Black Widow.
Oh, yeah. Most people think of all these actors in these movies now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's such a pop culture phenomenon. Like, dude. Samuel L. Jackson, like, how many roles that he has had, and people...
Mace Windu.
Yeah, right? And people call him Nick Fury.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Although Mickey Rourke didn't get the same notoriety or treatment.
He's the wrestler.
Yeah, right, yeah. Even Don Cheadle. Like, he's War Machine.
Don Cheadle, yes, he also played... I'm like at a loss for his name. I think it was Buck something in Boogie Nights. That's if I was to remember anything that he did, and like the most memorable spot is him in Boogie Nights. But I digress. I love him as War Machine as well. Two people in this movie are actually dead now. So RIP. Really? Yeah, RIP Gary Shandling and DJ AM. DJ AM, he was the DJ in at the party when him and War Machine first fought. So I found that interesting. And Spider-Man, this is a fun fact that I think everybody knows. Spider-Man made his appearance in this movie, but he was the little boy with the Iron Man mask on at the expo. So that's been confirmed by the directors.
Where that's kind of what's sets up Spider-Man almost in a sense.
Yep. So, and their relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was just like made afterwards to kind of juice up their relationship and the fact that Far From Home, you know, they were like partnered, but they confirmed it, I think, before Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
This.
I think.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was about to throw a little trivia thing myself.
Please do.
Yeah. Where, like, two identical Rolls-Royce Phantoms were destroyed during filming, and they were built especially for the film.
Like actual Rolls-Royces?
Mm-hmm. Those are very expensive vehicles Jesus that they destroyed. Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that pains me, knowing that someone decided to break all that.
Yeah, and they built it. So that's the other part of it. I'm going to hit you with one now. And then if you have another, you can hit me with one. So... The screenplay was written by Justin Theroux in conjunction with Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, Don Heck, and Larry Lieber, the people who actually wrote the comic. But Justin Theroux was attached to the screenplay, which I found absolutely fascinating. Because
that's a weird one.
I know. And so he's known for writing, but he plays these like random roles occasionally, and I don't know of many lead roles that he's had, but he's played like a bit character on Parks and Rec. And he was one of oh my God, what's his name? Bateman from American Psycho. He was the character's like friend at his workplace. But again, you don't see him as a lead, and he dated Jennifer Aniston, but he wrote this with them, which I found
very interesting.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can get into a little science fact here, but the palladium that he uses, that is actually a heavy metal that is rated with very low toxicity in real life. So it actually couldn't poison someone like using it, like Tony is using it.
Oh, my God. Do your research, I guess. Jesus, yes. Calling us idiots.
Right, yeah. And so Tony wouldn't be suffering from this ailment that he suffered from in real life, but in movie life he is. So, like, obviously, like, the toxicity level palladium was increased for this because he wasn't using, like, an ionized version of the element or anything, because Jarvis just says, like, you have a palladium core. And Jarvis being... the also just a rather very intelligent system is right. What it stands for would have said if it was any sort of bond or like ionic compound that he was using.
out
of
here.
So just pure palladium that Tony's using? Nah, actually can't kill him.
Cool. I'll get some of it for my home now that I know it's safe. The Stan Lee's cameo in this, Tony mistakes him for Larry King. And in the prior movie, he actually mistook him for Hugh Hefner. So Stan Lee's cameo in this one is another mistaken identity one. Whereas they, when they move forward, he's actually injected into, not the story, but like he's a part of, you know, a set or like a random scene. So I thought that was funny as they kind of go away from that thematic sense of he's, you know, like he thinks he's someone else as a joke versus he continues to be a joke, RIP. Oh, I guess three people are dead. too soon. I apologize. I thought that was interesting. So, I mean, wrapping it up, you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I think it can stand. I mean, it does have to lead off of the last one, but it can definitely stand alone. And then the post-credit scenes are scenes that lead to the next movie, but don't necessarily, like, if you just didn't have those, you could see these movies in three different sets. Because you got Iron Man. He says, I am Iron Man at the end. He fought and killed his villain. The second one, same thing. The third one, he is the same thing. It's him against Guy Pearce. And, and you know, Pepper Potts gets, you know, the... Well, okay, we won't go into that. But they can stand on their own, and all the other trilogies and or sequels go into the plot in the storyline of Infinity War. And, you know, talk about leading up to the post-credit scene in this movie. It was directed by Kenneth Branagh to set up the introduction of, not everyone knew it at the time, but now everybody's favorite, Thor.
Yeah.
And it's Thor's hammer in the crater in Mexico, in New Mexico. And do you know how to pronounce his, the name of it, the hammer?
Yeah, Mjolnir.
Mjolnir. which it sounds very like racistly French, you know, Mjolnir, but
Mjolnir.
But it's Norse, and it's we're going to talk about that here pretty soon the next time that we get together. But I actually really like Thor. I loved the story behind getting Kenneth Branagh to direct it, but I won't go too much into it for now. Kyle, I thank you for sitting down and discussing this movie with me. For now, I will say goodbye, and Kyle, you will say
good luck, everyone. It's awful cold out there.
Peace. Peace.